All right, well, let's flip back to a couple of those questions on community communication. All right, I think maybe number one is kind of an important one to ask. How do you see, or what do you see as the role of the church in relationship to the community? First of all, does the church have a role in the community? Yeah, we better. We better. What is that role? What as the congregation, what is that role? Because, you know, they're knocking on the door all the time for donations for the MS Society or be a part of our ecumenical morning of prayer or whatever. So what is the role of the congregation in the community?
To be a light, a source of spiritual leadership and teaching.
Okay. We should be in evangelizing. We should be welcoming. The next question talks about the social gospel. And I think that's really interesting because I'm pretty sure that her background includes a lot of the social gospel that maybe she doesn't want to call that. But do you think the concept of the social gospel is scriptural? Why or why not? And a lot of people do. A lot of people do. First of all, we have to kind of define what we mean by that.
I started to say, tell me what you're talking about in the social gospel.
Well, and what we're doing is talking about using all the social activities to try to draw people in. Because once we get them here, we can teach them. You know, if we give them donuts, we can teach them.
I say no to that, but you do have to have a relationship with someone before you can actually try to teach them.
Right, you do. You have to know someone. So in that sense of being part of the community, being known in the community, I think yes. But I think what she's talking about here is using the basketball team and the daycare centers and all those things to bring people in. Because if we can get them here, we can teach them. Well, we know that's not true.
The social gospel for me has taken on a little bit of a new meaning because I'm hearing my own children begin to talk about Jesus was about love. It's all about love. You've got to love. And whereas that's true, it's scaring me a little bit that that means they are, where they're attending is starting to eliminate teaching on issues.
Well,
and that bothers me.
It's true that God is love. It tells us that.
Yeah.
But that's not exclusive.
Yes.
And when we only want to hear the things that make that tickle our ears, then we're not growing and we're not learning and we're not going to be able to teach anybody else. And all of you, I'm sure, know people that feel like they're Christians. And have a lot of enthusiasm and zeal and righteous behavior. But when you start trying to talk about the meat of the gospel, they don't have any. They don't know that because they've never studied. They've never searched the scriptures like the Bereans. So yes, it that idea of God is love and that's all they read is a frightening concept. Because we can look at God and know that he takes his own vengeance. I mean, he said, vengeance is mine. And we know that he absolutely does not tolerate anyone who doesn't worship and treat him worshipfully.
Good.
Thank you. You know, I told you about my colleague I was going to be traveling with. We had more of a little explosion on our religious talks than we've ever had before. Because I of course invite her and she never comes, but I invite her anyway. And Sunday night was singing night, and I came back, and I always try to tell her something about the service, you know. And I was talking about a young man that was leading, and I said, you know, we don't have organs or pianos or anything. She said, I never understood that about y'all. And I said, well, the Bible doesn't say we can, it says to sing. And she kind of went off a little bit. She said, well, why not? It doesn't say you can't. And I said, oh, come on. She works for the federal government. She knows fully well that that won't fly with, like, performance standards on Head Start. It doesn't say you can't do this. Well, you don't play it that way. And I said, well, we try to do exactly what the Bible said. She said, oh, that's silly. Or stupid. Stupid, I think she said. She said, no offense. I said, no, I think I'm offended. I think that one offended me. Because I've never accused you of being stupid when we've had these discussions, so kind of back down a little bit. But.
Yeah,
think that that was offensive. Don't do that. But she's one of those people that has a lot of knowledge about a lot of things. She's a really, really smart lady and thinks she has some knowledge of Christianity, but not really. You know, not in any depth. She was, I told you, she kind of grew up sort of Methodist, but her mother was a Methodist. And we had, the reason that even came up, we had a friend who died and his funeral was at River Oaks Methodist down here. And that's where her mother had gone. And she said, that's why I hate churches. That church was... Her mother was not a very nice person, and that's the truth. But she convinced all the people there that she was, and they all loved her. She treated her own family terribly. And I said, well, that wasn't the fault of the church. That was your mother. And she didn't have anything to say to that because she knows it's true. I said, you can't blame that group of people for anything that your mother did, because you know that she convinced them she was one person when she was really another. Anyway, we talk every time. We'll see if it ever has any effect whatsoever. List some community projects or organizations you feel would be wholesome activities in which a Christian woman could participate. Well, I think that, yeah. Anything that's not against God's law, that's not illegal or immoral, a Christian woman can participate in. Now, some of them are going to take some time. We like community theater. We like to go community theater. Roger's always saying, you should be in a play. Well, I shouldn't. I'm a really lousy actress. I tried it one time. I even knew I sounded wooden and horrible. I can teach, but I can't act. But even if I could, all those rehearsals are going to take you away from some of what you should be doing. At least, you know, probably not going to make it to Wednesday evening service and those kinds of things. So I think there's, while the activity itself may be wholesome, you've got to look at all the pieces and parts of it. Glenda?
But you should be involved somewhere.
Absolutely.
You need to be somewhere so that people can see what you
right.
do.
You can't teach. You can't be a light if you're hidden. I agree.
I did the community theater for a while, and I can attest to the fact that, well, in my case, the community theater practices, rehearsals, did not interfere with worship. However, during Tech Week, the week right before the play, we were required to be there mm-hmm. every night. And so I did miss then, mm-hmm. and that was very hard to explain to my children, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. that I was going to miss service for this. And, you know, then there was also the fact that some Christians were offended because they all, you know, all my good friends came to watch me. Mm-hmm. And they, you know, commented on the fact that the play had a lot of swears in it. Mm-hmm. And even you know, Hello Dolly and somebody,
yeah.
they were taking license and using these words. And I always changed my words. I mean, it was even mm-hmm. noticed by some non-Christian audience mm-hmm. members that I never spoke a bad mm-hmm. word. And they were in my script, mm-hmm. but I wouldn't say them. I changed the words, and, you know, my director
laughed. And you got in
laughed.
Trouble for that.
No, he actually laughed at me, because I came up with some good ones, some good words, funny things to say instead. But, you know, I thought I was being the light by doing that, and some Christians, you know, kind of pointed out the fact that the person I'm the most important light to is my children.
Mm-hmm.
And if they see me compromising, you know, you might want to rethink this.
Mm-hmm.
So it is tricky because it you know, you can be doing something completely harmless, but like you say, you know, it does have a ripple effect.
Right.
Sometimes I think, like, one of the best things of community work and showing your example is doing exactly, like, joining something that might take you away from church, but, like, make sure you never get taken away from church.
Right.
Like, my job and I used to act in high school, and I always, well, middle school, but I never, like, left. Mm-hmm. Like, I work up till, and right. I work the hardest I could, and I was a main character in the play at the time, and I was like, I'm not staying. Mm-hmm. I was like, you do my acts before, or I'm not gonna, and they never, like, kicked me out, or
right.
I never lost my job over it, but
right.
they
and you can take those stands that show something to the community, and I think that's really important, and particularly for a very young person, like you said you were then, that's tough. Mm-hmm. That's tough holding that line, so I'm very proud of you. But there are community things we can do. There are community things we should do. And I don't think I do enough of them. I tend to be a little bit of a hermit. You know, once I'm in my home, I like it. I'm happy. What?
You have... You only start listening what you do.
I don't do so much of it anymore.
Okay.
Well.
But I understand.
Yeah. But I think we have to kind of push that. Maybe as things in our homes and families start crowding in on us, maybe we have to push that community thing a little bit more. So maybe I'll work harder at that.
You can be so busy saving the world that you forget your family.
That's right. Yeah. It's a tough balance.
It's a helping your daughter with your grandchildren, and that's a huge important thing.
Thank you. Debbie?
Well, and just little things like going in the grocery store after church on Sunday, they see y'all dressed.
You're dressed.
Or somewhere you go all the time.
Yeah.
You know, be friendly to the people. If you have an opportunity to invite them or say, you know, I know just about everybody that works up here is super safe.
Right.
You know, and we talk and visit, and that's a way to...
It is, to be a part of the
community. Because everybody's not going to get involved. I mean, that's just not in everybody's personality, too.
And being involved, like you're saying, doesn't mean you have to volunteer for something.
Exactly.
Or there are other ways to be a part of the community.
Chicken soup to your neighbors is a really nice one.
It is.
It's a nice
thing.
And I
could
get sick real easy.
Could you?
Number six, I just want to talk about because I think it's kind of an odd question. Is the answer, I have my hands full with church work, ever justifiable in declining to become involved with one's community? Yes.
Yeah.
But I think she wants you to say no. I think she wants you to say, well, you have to balance that out and be a part of the community. And I also think, and this is just my supposition, that I have my hands full with church work. If you go to a congregation where they have all those social gospel things, then there are a lot of other committees and all that kind of stuff going on that we don't have. Now, should we certainly be involved with work for the church, at the church, at the building? Yes, absolutely. But I'm not sure that any of us would be so busy with activities created by this congregation that we wouldn't have time to do community things. Now, I'm not saying we shouldn't be very involved and we have lots of work to do. But I think she wanted us to say no to that and say, no, I'm going to be a part of my community. Oh, here's a good one. What political issues might have been decided more favorably had religious, righteous people spoken up?
Abortion.
Actually, I don't think that would have... I think we need to say our piece, and we do say our piece, but I honestly don't think that would have mattered. I think the forces of evil are so strong in this country at this point that it's overriding us like it did, like it has done before, and like it will do again.
Right, but
we
that's
have to
not
stand
to
our ground.
Yeah.
We have to stand our ground, and it gets uncomfortable sometimes.
Well, but I do think that's a perfect example. A small example was Parker County was dry till 10 years ago.
Yeah, about that.
And that was because people turned out in force to vote it down every time.
Mm-hmm.
And as the community exploded with all these new people, mm-hmm. I knew we were doomed.
I did too.
And we're not dry anymore in Parker County.
River Oaks is still.
River Oaks is still.
It's changed since I've heard of
Is Super Safe not in River Oaks? Because they started selling liquor.
Well, there's different kinds of wet and dry.
Yeah.
You can sell beer and wine.
Okay, but not the hard
as opposed to drinks at a restaurant.
Okay.
Those kinds of things.
Oh, okay.
So package stores are different than grocery stores, are different than drinks at a club and a restaurant. And did you know in the state of Texas that if you're going to serve... Now, I've got to look this up because I'm just remembering. If you want to serve beer or wine or something like that, you have to be within so many feet of the interstate or miles. Or how weird is that? Something's very wrong there.
It may have changed.
It probably has changed.
I'm just thinking that there's...
But there used to be some ruling that you had to be close to where you drove. Makes sense to me at all. Is your community considering any political issue right now in which you feel a Christian woman could become actively involved? Now that becomes very tricky. because so many of the, once you get out of very, very local politics, the party takes over. This is not politics, but I guess it is sort of. I used to be a member of PTA. When my kids were little, I was in PTA. I have a lifetime membership PTA certificate because I was president of a local one. I wouldn't put my name with PTA now for love nor money. If you go to their website and read what their political platforms are and what they push for, I can't support any of it. And yet people join organizations and they don't bother to know what they're about. Because they, you know, parent-teacher association, that's good. Well, it's good, except they're spending your dues lobbying in Washington on things that I don't want them to lobby for. So I would not be a part of that organization ever again. And I think that's sad. I think they've taken, you know, you get away from here's what you're doing for these kids here locally. I belong to an organization, a professional organization called Texas Council on Family Relations. And I'm seeing our new president want to move us more and more into the political arena. And the board keeps pushing him back and saying we're an educational organization. And our job is to educate families on topics and send them to resources. It is not to take a political stance one way or the other. But it's a hard job keeping him pulled back on that. So I think you need to be very cautious about what bumper sticker you put on your car. You know, because maybe somebody, maybe you don't know everything about that organization that you should, but the person beside you at the stoplight does. Just my personal thoughts on that. Discuss whether it's a valid concern that the community think well of the church. What do you think?
I think it should.
I think it should.
Yes,
to the,
and no.
Yes and no. To the,
I don't think we should be meeting that by
right.
We have to be.
Right.
And we are.
And that's the point. They should think well of us when they think of, are these honest people who are forthright, who obey the laws, who, you know, are good citizens, that kind of image.
Friendly, welcoming.
Right. All that should be good. But the community isn't going to like us when we stand against abortion, when we stand against gay marriage.
There's a church in Georgia that put this scripture, they just put the reference about, you know, homosexuality being an abomination before the Lord, and the community news media went crazy over that and really badmouthed that church.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Erica's actually worshipped there, you know, after that, like right after that. And they were a little worried about the ripple effect of how they were going to be received in the community.
But I think if you stand firmly and are kind concerning what you believe, and not, you know, not stirring up anything, just standing.
Not overtly offensive.
That people will respect you.
Yeah.
Mostly.
I get concerned that we are concerned about homosexuality over all other issues. The rule is in 1 Corinthians, let every man have his own wife and each woman have her own husband. Anything outside of that is offensive to God and it's an abomination. And I think when we, and I have explained it that way before and had them accept it. Mm-hmm. Oh, okay, I didn't know you believed that. Well, what about, and the person they brought up was Newt Gingrich. I said, no, I wouldn't vote for him for anything because he is not loyal to his family.
Yeah.
Because he's outside God's word on that. I wouldn't. Yeah. And it depends just exactly how you say it.
Mm-hmm. Because you can stand without trying to offend someone.
That's right.
They may become offended, and you can't help that if you're standing for truth. But you don't have to be an offensive person to make your stand, I don't think.
No, I'm not talking about being mealy-mouthed.
No,
ma'am.
I'm standing
firm. Right. Yeah,
that's right.
But in a polite way, a respectful way, in a way that says, I didn't say this. God said it.
I had nothing to do with this.
Yeah. So just my question, first to pop around a little bit, should we be involved in politics?
Yes.
Yeah?
I'm a politician. They run the country.
Yeah.
With politics.
And I think we can become so, I don't think it would do any good, mm-hmm. that we back off and don't do anything. And I think that's a problem. But, you know, y'all probably all know my very simplistic method of voting anymore. I vote them out. If they're an incumbent, I vote against them. I figure they've had one term, that's all they get. Used to make Mike crazy. He'd say, "You're an intelligent person. Why aren't you looking at the issues?" I said, "Because they get corrupted after one term, so I vote them out." It's very easy to vote that way. You don't have to. All right, moving on to chapter 9. Now, I will say that I am, while I think this is a good book, I'm getting a little bored. Are you? Because I think you can only talk about communication so many ways, and I think she stretched her book a little bit. So, my idea is that maybe we're going to cut through some of these chapters a little more quickly. Not this one. This communicating to the lost is the one we need to be talking about the most. But some of these things have already been spoken about. So, if you feel like I'm moving through it too quickly, stop me. We'll slow down. Because I can slow down as well as anybody else. But I do think there are some of these that are a little bit repetitive as we go past. So, but probably with the exception of what do you communicate to your children, this may be the most important one after that. What do you communicate to the lost? Because that's what we're supposed to be doing. That is our work here on earth, to spread the gospel. And God gives the increase, but we're to spread the word. And I don't think I'm very good at it. I'm pretty good about talking to any of y'all. I knew that. It's harder to talk to people who aren't interested, who've never expressed an interest. But let's think about people like, say, Chris and Kyle. They came out of a nothing religious background, as far as I can tell, bits and pieces of things. But you talk about two people who are on fire to know what the word says and to do it. They are just... It's a couple who placed membership here about a year ago, I guess. And just, they want to know what's in the book, you know?
And they change immediately.
Immediately.
What they're doing is wrong.
Immediately.
Since and you brought him up, I need to mention this. He called, I don't know if it's last night or the night before, to talk to your dad. And he that had that little meeting, you know, mm-hmm. about the services and how to improve, make it run smoothly. And he was interested in leading singing.
Really? Yeah. Kyle had a stroke several years back, so he has trouble speaking and moving his arm. So, I mean, that is really impressive that he would,
I thought it was,
he would want to do that. So the reason I'm bringing him up is if we had just met them on the street, knowing kind of a little bit about them when you meet them, would we have said, "Oh, well, they'll never be interested"? Would we have been guilty of saying, "They'll never be interested"? And I think maybe I would. And we don't know the hearts of men. And we forget the power of the gospel. We forget that it turns people. Not us. It's not us. Yes, ma'am.
Another thing I've learned throughout my life, because I always felt guilty about the fact that, you know, I never brought a lost person from not knowing Christ to the baptistry. You know, that was always a big deal to me. Which, you know, now that I've had four children that have all obeyed the gospel, I can't really say that. But at the time, I was younger, and, mm-hmm. and I was really disturbed by that. And another Christian kind of set my thinking straight on this, and I think it really helped me a lot, to learn to speak and not worry about results. He said, "Every one of us is on a spiritual journey. You don't know where in that journey you're meeting that person. Your job is just to plant the seed or water the seed. You're not necessarily required to bring them to the baptistry. Mm-hmm. You know, they might not be ready for that yet, but if you're doing your part, something you say right now, when they're ready, is going to have stayed with them mm-hmm. to help them make that decision when the time comes.
And all those people,
God gives the increase.
God gives the increase. And all those people that you don't know about anymore, you don't know. You don't know whether they become Christians, Erica.
Miss Chris Chandler, if you talk to her, she was telling me one time when, like, we were talking about how it's kind of hard and how she came in. She said it was the person that she met so long ago that brought her to like one service. And then she didn't really think about it. She didn't change it. She says she never forgot that service, never forgot that person that helped her. And she said that was the one that she remembered. Just them saying something and bringing her somewhere, even though she didn't like say anything then or talk to them then. She said,
and it didn't change her life much then.
Right.
But it did. Yeah. And I just think we pass up opportunities because we assume we know their heart. At least I do. And I think that's a failing. It's a failing. So she says we need to start by remembering what our faith does for us. Removing the guilt. That's an amazing thing. Can you imagine if you didn't have a way to move forward after those things you do that are wrong? You couldn't put it past you. You couldn't think it was ever over. But God says it's over. He says he removes it. He forgets it. He wipes it out of the book.
Sorry. And I'm so glad he does that, mm-hmm. so I don't have to face it.
Yes. Yes. I am grateful. I am grateful. Acts 13, 38 through 39 says, through Christ we can have forgiveness of our sins and justification from all things. We know that baptism washes away our sins. They're gone. Now that to me is incredible because the human brain has a hard time eliminating something. And when we do start eliminating things, we get worried because we know our brain's not supposed to work that way. But God says it's gone, as if it never happened. What a glorious thing. And I don't know how people live their lives without having that. I don't know how they live with guilt because everybody does things they feel guilty about unless you're completely immoral. And I don't know if there's anybody that's so gone that they have zero things they feel bad about. Christianity furnishes peace of mind. Every time I feel that I've really, really messed up and there's no way it can be okay, I remember Paul, who said, I'm the chiefest of sinners. And if Paul can know with such certainty that he finished the race and that he's going to that reward with what he did, then that gives me great peace of mind.
I think that's why God gave us all those examples, the example of Abraham and of David and of Jonah.
Yeah.
You know, his whininess. And then says that to us.
Yeah.
Okay.
Even if.
Even if, like Paul, we are a murderer.
Mm-hmm.
Even if.
Yeah. You know, who was the... Jeffrey Dahmer?
Mm-hmm.
Crazy Jeffrey Dahmer? You know, a preacher, a minister of the Church of Christ, taught him, and he was baptized. And there are people who say he can never be forgiven for those terrible things. But God says he could. And then they'll say, well, he didn't truly repent. Well, that's not mine to know.
Mm-hmm.
That's God's to know. So from the physical evidence that I have, that he was taught the truth, that he obeyed the gospel, he was baptized, I believe Jeffrey Dahmer made it to heaven. Now, that's crazy insane. Because he did horrible, horrible things on this earth.
But he still had to acknowledge that. And the thing is, what he did is no worse than any of us. In the eyes of God.
Right. There are no big sins and little sins, and we forget that. Because we don't like it. You know, it's...
We don't want him to be forgiven because he was so bad.
Right.
And that's really... David's aunt, David's family will say that. I don't want him to go to heaven.
And
they will say that.
That's scary.
It is. It was. I said,
mm-hmm.
We had a...
They think there's not enough room for everybody? Or?
And, well, they're like the people who say, I don't believe he did that.
Oh.
I don't believe he was sorry.
I
don't believe he could. I don't want him in heaven with me.
well,
my thing is,
that's what I said to him. Well, you may not have to worry about it. They know
I truly believe God's going to protect me in heaven.
Yeah.
I think I'm all going to be okay. And I have to admit, when I read this about Carl Jung, I never... I never would have thought that. I need to go back and read his work because this doesn't match what I'm remembering about Jung. But he says, with the decline of religious life, the neuroses grow noticeably more frequent. I believe that statement to be true. I was just surprised that she said it was from Carl Jung. A friend one time told me that, and I don't know if he had proof of this or if he just read it somewhere, that there were more Christians in mental asylums than any other particular religious belief. He said, because when they go off the deep end and do something wrong, their conscience won't leave them alone. They can't deal with what they know they've done. I don't know if that was true or not, but it was an interesting comment. Jesus said in John 16:33, we're on page 82, "These things I have spoken to you, that in me ye might have peace." I think that's the most valuable earthly gift we can have, is peace. I don't think we appreciate it very much when we're young, because you haven't had enough things pounding you to know how good it feels when that moment of peace comes in. And I remember as a child thinking, when it talked about heaven as a place of rest and peace, thinking,
yeah, that's how boring.
I had to be a lot older before rest became an important issue. But that peace of mind, when it says, "Oh death, where is thy sting? Oh grave, where is thy victory?" The sting of death is sin, but thanks be to God, which give us the victory through our Lord Jesus Christ. We've got it all. We've accomplished that victory. All we have to do is hang on to it. And I know that as we approach more the end of life than the first of life, there's more thought about it. What does that mean? What does it mean to be in the next life? What can I expect? What can I hope for? How does it feel? I mean, maybe I'm the only person in the room that's having those questions, but those are in my head. And I think we have the peace that God says, it's going to be fine. You're going to be with me. It's going to be all right. And you know you're going to be with me because I've promised you. Jesus said, "I've gone to prepare a home for you with many mansions. If it were not so, I would have told you." It's going to be fine. And I think, for me, that's the thing I hang on to. Okay, I don't understand it. I don't know what it's going to be like. But you said it's going to be okay.
But we know God.
We know God.
Lord, we
and that's learning
from His Word.
And then she quoted probably my most favorite verse in the Bible. "This is the day which the Lord hath made. We will rejoice and be glad in it." And I think that verse is overlooked sometimes because it says, we will rejoice and be glad in it. It's not really a suggestion. It's, look what I've given you. Look what I've given you. I've given you this wonderful day. Appreciate it. Appreciate this life. Appreciate that you have an afterlife to look forward to.
I have finally read something. I don't remember where. But he said, everything that God did, did for you.
Yeah.
Everything.
It's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah. And so when you put that and put your name there, mm-hmm. and your child's name there,
mm-hmm.
pretty powerful stuff. Pretty powerful stuff.
Christianity provides a purpose for living. How do you feel about that statement?
It's true. It's wrong. It's true. That's what Ecclesiastes says. Well, whole of man.
It is the whole of man. I wonder how people who aren't looking forward to another life deal with what they have on this earth. I would think it would overwhelm you with angst. You know, if this is all there is, that old song, is that all there is?
Well, isn't that what's happening? I mean, why do we have so many deranged people shooting up schools and killing themselves afterward and doing all these, blowing up people and blowing up themselves? They have no hope. They have
right.
no purpose.
And they look around and every day is
They're
hard.
They're filled with mm-hmm. anger and pain.
Yeah. And so
happen.
Why continue? Yeah. So I believe absolutely that Christianity gives us a reason for life, gives us a purpose. Her last paragraph there says, the Christian life relieves us from the pressures of striving to attain possessions or power, because we know that our hope is not in them. I don't like money as much as the next guy. You know, I wish I had a little more of it. Things would be a little easier if I had a little more of it. But what I learned in all those years working at Randy's office in the CPA firm is all those people with a whole lot of money, and we had a lot of clients with a whole lot of money, they worried about it just as much as I did. And they never had enough in either, because they had bigger bills and bigger expenses. And so the amount of money didn't change the amount of anxiety, worry, whatever. And that the people who learned not to let the money rule them were much happier people. We had a client who ran a nursery business, a wholesale nursery business. And he looked like a gardener. You know, when he come in, he's wearing his ratty jeans and his old hat. I remember one time, and I rarely looked at the money that people did, because it's just numbers when you're in a firm like that. But his tax return came through, and I happened to notice that he had more money on interest on his CDs than we were making in like 2 years. On interest on his CDs. But you would never have known any of that by him. And he was a happy, carefree guy, and just, you know, doing his, planting his plants and selling them, and
well, I'm enjoying every minute.
He liked digging in the dirt, Mother, just like you.
One of my favorite things.
Keep trying to get her to come dig in my dirt, but she won't do it.
I have lots of dirt in my
I like this next piece. Christianity assures friendship. A fourth and very practical advantage to Christianity is that it is a guarantee against loneliness. That is so true. So very true. Like my little trip to New Caney. Actually, I found Haley a roommate for college, because one of the young ladies there is also going to Tech, and her parents said, yeah, we're looking for a roommate. And I said, well, here's my daughter's name. And the young lady looked there and said, I know her from camp. I said, oh. All right. But when we think about the community, when we think about the lost in the community, here are some of the things we're offering them. It removes guilt. It gives peace of mind. It provides a purpose for living. Friendships and a family. I know that if I needed to, I could call any person in this room and say, here's what I need. Now, there are people in this congregation that I'm closer to than others. I would probably call them first. But I could still call anybody here, and they would do whatever they could for me, as they know I would for them. And I don't doubt that for a minute. Do any of y'all doubt that? Don't you know you could pick up that directory and just kind of go and call that person? And they would do what they could. And
I've needed to do that, and it's a real comfort to know that there's help close by.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And people who want to help. It means something to them to give the help. Roger and I were talking about Hope this morning. He's, I hope, on his way over to see her. Or maybe he's going to wait till you got out and see if y'all wanted to go. I don't remember. But he was talking about how she's had so much physical suffering for so many years, and yet just cheerful and funny and always looking out for other people. And if I needed Hope to do something for me, she would do it if she could possibly stand on one leg and get it done. That's quite a comment. I feel very close to some of my friends that I've known for my entire life. It's a pretty close community here. I have friends from high school, which is like 45 years ago, that I could call and ask for something. But I couldn't just pull the annual out and pick one. It'd be a very few, you know, that I had maintained contact with. Sharon would be one, but she didn't count because she's in this group too. But, so there aren't many groups that offer that, I don't think. People say fraternities and sororities, but again, it's that same little narrow piece.
When my children's father was diagnosed with brain tumor, the church overwhelmed with food and visits and calls. And up until then, my father-in-law at the time had been an agnostic, and she was made a lot of deriding comments about the church and the things we were doing with the church, and didn't understand why we spent so much time with them and blah, blah, blah. And that
one day we were coming down in the elevator together, and she said, "I've just been amazed by what everybody's doing." And I said, "Well, this is normal." I said, "You know, it's their love for God overflowing into love for us." And she said, "I can see that." Yeah. And years later, her husband was dying, and the church did the same thing for her, even though she wasn't a member. But they knew her through us and cared. And they had been members of the German club for the whole time he'd been here in America, which was since he was 15 or 16 years old. She said, "We've had friends our whole lives, and not one of them has even called." You know, and yet the church, she wasn't even a member there, was doing the same for them that they had done for us. And that really spoke to her a lot.
Yeah. Well, my sister-in-law, Yvonne, will tell you that she lived in California at the time and had gotten very lax, had fallen away, hadn't been to services in a couple of years. But she had a baby, and the baby died of SIDS. And she said that one of the women from the congregation called her and said, "We want to help. We want to be there for you." And they brought food, and they did all these things. And she was astonished because she had left them. And she'll tell you that's what brought her back. That they cared enough about her even then.
Just a cup of cold water.
All right, just quickly, let's talk about some ways, other ways we've started it. That's what I want to hear on how friendship has been shown to you in a congregation. Just an example or two. Oh, don't cry. We cry a lot here. It's okay if you cry, but you don't have to share. When you can talk, you can share.
When we first moved here, Tracy just kind of took us in. She took me, and of course we had little kids too, and she was very good to, you know, say, "Let's go do this or that." And
made you feel a part of the community.
Yes, and not be so homesick in the beginning.
That's good.
So
that's good.
You know, that really helped me.
Others? I know that when I've been visiting other places, people, I could call the congregation and somebody would come pick me up. You know, I'd flown in somewhere, maybe didn't know how to get to the congregation. They can pick me up, take me to services. They didn't know me. And a couple of my friends said, "You're going to get in a car with somebody you don't know." I said, "Eh, they'll send Grandma to pick me up. It'll be okay."
I will just say that I have often prayed to the Lord in great gratitude for those people He's put around.
Yeah, they're important.
Talking about other congregations. One of my favorite examples is when I was on a trip driving from my parents' house back home. I had my, at the time, like mid-teenage brother with me, and my two kids, which were probably two-ish at the time, and we broke down in the middle of nowhere. Like, nowhere. Like, walk up the road and find the gas station, and that, and there was no garage, like, in that area. But, and we didn't know if we were going to get the car. We finally got someone to come get it and tow it and all that. In the meantime, I'd call Justin, tell him what's going on. He called his mom. His mom started getting on the phone through network people she knows, who knows this, and looks up the church. Within, like, 2 hours, we had a place to stay if we needed to overnight. We had people like, "Oh, do you need anything? Can we get you? Can you bring me something?"
Yeah.
We ended up being able to get the car fixed after all. And we, but it was very comforting
was there.
To know.
Yeah.
That, you know, in the middle of nowhere with, you know, 2 year olds, two of them.
Yeah, two of them.
Teenage brother.
Yeah.
You know, I had no idea what to do, but there were people
your
all
Christian
around.
Your Christian family's going to rescue you. Yeah, it's amazing.
I didn't know any of those people, though.
There's somebody over here.
When I had Erica, I had an unexpected cesarean, and a 2.5-year-old daughter and a 16-month-old son. And I wasn't supposed to lift anything heavier than the baby for the first 3 weeks. And I had my husband called me while I was in the hospital to tell me that he was basically going to be busy every night, every week for the next 6 weeks. And
he wasn't going to be home. And I got off the phone and just thought, what in the world am I going to do? Yeah. And not 2 minutes later, two ladies come in from the church and said, don't worry about it. We've made a schedule. We'll have someone with you from the time he leaves in the morning until he gets home at night. And they did.
It's an amazing, amazing group of people. And I'm sorry for those people that don't have it. I really am.
Yeah, I don't know what we would have done. Also, when Jason was in the hospital, he was there for 6 weeks. And we had Zoe, who obviously couldn't stay in the hospital every day for 6 weeks with us, too. So we never had any bit of problem finding a place for her to go. If we needed anything, food, company, visits.
Yeah.
We had all that.
It's a good thing.
I have some stories, but I can't tell them.
Because you're going to cry, too. Well, Linda will fan you. She's
yeah,
got a fan.
Here we go.
All right, well, let's...
I don't have one of those.
Let's pick up there next time. Christianity gives security.